Okay. Having said that, it's Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name, as it always has been and always will be, is Bill DeYoung. And I'm here today with David M. Jenkins, who is the artistic director of Jobsite Theater in Tampa, and the lovely and talented Catherine Yacco, who is in the cast of the new show. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
We're here to talk about the show, and I'm going to say the name. It is called, take a deep breath, it is called Puffs. Or Seven Increasingly Eventful Years at a Certain School of Magic and Magic. It is written by Matt Cox, and I wanted to start here. I know that in your advertising, in your social media, in your marketing, you can't say the words Harry Potter. You can't say J.K. Rowling. You can't say...
So we can say the word Harry, and we can say the word Potter.
Well, I mean, as far as you're saying, what's the show about?
When we put the two words together officially, we can get into trouble. So we can talk about Mr. Potter all day long.
How
we can talk about Harry
that?
All day long. But there are other things, right? And so it's a certain school of magic and not another thing.
Uh-huh.
We do mention J.K. Rowling insofar as to say that the show is not licensed, endorsed, affiliated in any way, shape, or form with J.K. Rowling, Warner Brothers, Routledge Press, or anyone that has ever had anything to do with the movies, books, play.
What I was going to say, though, is that you can't say these things,
right?
But I can.
You can. You can say all those things you want.
And
you
so that's what I'm going to do. So yeah. This show, Puffs, is a parody of the Harry Potter universe. It is very, very fast-paced. It's pretty breathless, actually. I mean, it never, what is it, 2 hours and something?
Yeah, 2:15 with the intermission.
Never slows down. I mean, it's what you call a madcap comedy. It's not really a satire because it has its own story. It's funny as hell, folks. Anyway, and it runs through August 3rd. And you guys are in the Jape Theater, which is the larger of the two that Jobsite generally uses over there, the other one being the Schimberg, which is sort of the black box. Is that because it has an 11-member cast and you can't fit that many people in the Schimberg?
Both. We, you know, with the two shows we book into the Jape every year, we try to target shows that we think we can sell that many tickets on. And that's really the fundamental, you know, logic is like, can we sell that many tickets? What can we do in there that we can sell that many tickets? And on the other side of it, yes, it would be a challenge to get 11 people on stage in the Schimberg.
How many people were in a Midsummer Night's Dream? That was a big cast.
Midsummer was 13 in the Schimberg. And we had MRSA going around, so I don't recommend ever doing that again. 13 people in a tiny room.
I just remember the ladies hanging from the silks and doing all that stuff. And it's like, yeah. at least two people who were elevated a lot of the time. So, you know, that made me think of something, David. The show, as we were talking before, it's doing really well. You just had your first weekend. Did you know that it would? I mean, is that one of those things where you go, yeah, let's put this one in the Jape? I mean, is there any such thing as a surefire?
There's not anything such thing as a sure thing, but clearly I did believe that they could sell the Jape or we wouldn't have booked it in there. We cannot take risks anymore. No, none of us are in a financial position to be like, let's throw the dice and see, because we'd be bankrupt right now.
Mm.
So I really did believe that the show was at least going to be able to cover expenses in that big room, which are not cheap. And thankfully it's pacing even past that. So it's not just, you know, covering the bills, but it's going to make some money, which is great.
Can you talk to me about, I asked you about this the night that I saw it, the kind of how this got on your radar. And I think you said it's been a few years. You're like, I want to do this show. But how'd that happen?
So my good friend that I went to college with, John Pinkard, we both went to the University of Florida together. Go Gators. You know a little bit about him.
Yeah.
And
I think so.
Yeah, a little bit about the region. So John was working. He's a Tony Award-winning producer, probably most notably for Gentleman's Guide. He was one of the producers on that. And so he was working on this workshop of it at the University of Florida and was like, hey, you should come up and see this. And I'm like, dude, I'm busy. I haven't seen my wife in a couple of months, right? Mm. So, but then it kind of got to the point of like, hey, like maybe we could do a thing after we do it at UF and we could bring it down to Tampa. I actually pooped all over that idea because I was like, dude, it's mid-season. I'm so busy. We don't have any money. Where am I going to put it? I don't know what theater to go in. We don't have cash.
When was this?
2014.
Okay, it's a while ago.
Yeah. Okay. And so then it went to New York. It was supposed to run for a week at one theater. It ended up running like 8 years and like moved and, you know, became this huge thing. And I was like, boy, don't I have egg on my face now. But then, you know, sort of the lockdown happened and then the next 5 years. And so, right, it's taken us this long to get to it.
Catherine, let me ask you, if you would, tell the folks at home about Puffs. What are Puffs and what are we looking at here? I mean, I can tell them, but I want to hear it from you because you're one of them, or two of them, or 10 of them,
yes,
or something.
I'm about 10 yeah. or 10 plus of the puffs. And of course, I can't mention specifically what it's based on. Yeah. But, you know, there's certain houses in the School of Magic and Magic. And the Puffs is kind of known as the losers of the school because we have the Braves and we have the Snakes, which are, you know, just like the snobby assholes, if you will. And mm-hmm. then we have the Smarts, and it's kind of clear what those...
You're tiptoeing around it, but yeah, yes. I get it. It's,
so, yeah.
The way it works up there with various houses.
Right. And the thing with the Puffs is that they're never really... in the actual franchise, they're not really highlighted ever. People are kind of confused about what the house stands for, and so this is their story of the underdogs.
Right.
Yeah,
very famously, there's only the one sort of character in book four or movie four.
There is a real Puffs.
This dude was a big deal, and so he sort of anchors the...
Book four, is that Azkaban?
Book four is the Goblet of Fire. I'm allowed to say the book names, but yeah. The Goblet of Fire, which has the Tri-Wizard Tournament in that book.
So in other words, it's the story of this house trying to interact with the others, not... always successfully.
Never really successfully. Book four.
Yay, what is it? Yay, third place or whatever.
Third or nothing.
Third or nothing.
Right, third out of four. That's right.
So, well, let me ask you both, because as I was explaining to Catherine before, you know, I never read the books. I'm more of a Lord of the Rings fan. You do that one next. I'm front row. And so I saw a couple of the films, and I kind of get the whole mythology and the world and everything. I was at the show. I appreciated how funny it was and how fast it was. I didn't get most of the references. Is this just for fans of these books and these films?
No, absolutely not.
Am I too old?
No.
Is that what we're saying here?
No. You know, we had two couples show up to one of the first previews, and at intermission, the one couple was saying, like, you know, oh my God, this is so funny. I don't know why it's funny, but it's really funny. And the other couple's like, what do you mean you don't understand why it's funny? And they're like, well, I've never seen any of these books. So, like, I don't really, you know, I haven't seen the movies. I don't know the books. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know the books or the movies? And they're like, we don't know the books or the movies, but it's still funny. We just don't know what the references mean. It's still funny.
Yeah.
And I think that's very conscious on Matt's part, because the playwright,
yeah,
that it, you know, it sends up a lot of these tropes of sort of the underdog comedy, right? Like the team-based comedy. So, like,
oh, wait, there was a reference to the Mighty Ducks.
Right. They make references.
Oh, I remember
that. See,
that I got.
So, like, if you understand sort of that, like, you know, it's Animal House in a way, right? Like, here are the kids that don't fit in.
Yeah.
Here are the group of, you know, dorks that nobody wants to hang out with. And it, you know, like everything from the Goonies to, right, like, so I think that the oeuvre it's working is something that people are going to know. Right. Will you laugh at it more because you get that little insider joke of what that little thing
means?
Sure. But the thing itself is silly enough that we've had plenty of people so far that don't really know the franchise.
There is a character named Harry.
Yes, there is a character named Harry.
And that's Caroline? Huerta,
yeah, Carolyn Huerta.
Okay, right. And can you give us a little context there? I mean, I tread carefully, however you have to say it.
Well, no, I can talk. So Caroline plays Harry, who is a familiar protagonist.
Has a little round glasses.
A little orphan boy with a scar shaped like a, you know who that is.
That
but the story is not about Harry. The story is about these, but Harry is still a member of the company, and Harry is accompanied by his two very close friends in our production, Ron Mopp and Hermione. And
Hermione.
Hermione is a
that
wig.
That I got too. Right. Okay, now it's coming back.
Hermione is a wig.
Yeah.
On a wig head, and Ron Mopp is, as you might have been able to guess, a red mop. And so, yeah.
See, I mean, not being somebody from the Potter universe, that I found funny.
Yeah.
Because that was like, let's take this under the
radar.
And
in this world, Harry's kind of a little
annoying. It was a wink-wink thing. Oh, Harry's very annoying. Tell Caroline I said that.
Yeah.
Good. She did her job well.
How do you'd never seen this play before, I assume. So is there a roadmap? I mean, it seems so complicated. You know, you get a script.
Mm-hmm.
You get all these words on pages, but is there a roadmap? Here's how it should go. Or do you just visualize it in your head? Can you look at the script and it's they're running around your head. This is what it needs to look like.
I felt like I knew the roadmap because I've done a lot of these sort of like, you know, like a bridge shows and things that are like the complete whatever. Like I've done a lot of these sort of the genre based kind of things. And so I feel like there is a roadmap that exists within it. There were a lot of things that I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And I had a roadmap. And then right literally before we started rehearsal, I watched the Off-Broadway production because I had enough of my own ideas sort of coalesced about what I wanted to do with things. But I'll be 100% honest. I watched what they did and they did this show for 8 years and I went, oh yeah, no, that okay, that makes way more sense. And you know, that's where I go to All Great Artists Theft, and I was like, their solution was better,
of course.
And then in the process, it was as much up to the actors, because I would look at everybody and say the funniest idea in the room wins, and no matter whose idea it is, or even if it wasn't even about something they did, like it could have been about something somebody else was doing, and that's sort of the environment I wanted to keep alive in the room.
Catherine, can you talk to me about the various, all 10 of them, the characters you play, who are they? And you were what's her name's mother?
Yes.
You were so, the evil.
Mm-hmm, I was the evil.
You remember her name, don't you?
Yes. Xavier Jones, I can say that. Yeah. So I play the mother of Megan Jones,
yes,
who's one of the trio.
And that's Logan.
Puffs. That's yeah. Logan, yes, right, whom we love. Right, right. And so I play her evil mother in the second act. But is she evil? Question mark. You'll mm-hmm. have to come and see the show to find out. I also play Professor McGee. Mm-hmm. And I play a lot of the professors.
Sprouty,
that's right, who is the head of the Puffs house. Both in this and in the franchise. And then, like Professor Lanny, and
the headmaster.
Yeah. The headmaster, the first headmaster, because as you may know from the yeah. original headmaster.
Yeah.
Virtually RIP.
This I happen to know too. Yes, yeah.
So exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and so, yeah, a lot of the adult roles in this, school of magic and magic, but I also do play, one of the Puffs, Hannah, who was based on an actual Puff in the franchise. I think that's the youngest character I play.
Was Hannah the really obnoxious one? Is she one no. I'm thinking of? Who was the really obnoxious one?
Leanne.
Which one?
Oh.
they're all like, sort of sorry. Different layers of obnoxious.
Depending on your definition of that, I think several qualify.
It was flying by.
Susie Bones, Sally Perks, and Leanne are all a little annoying.
A little obnoxious.
Well, obnoxious. Well, let me ask you this, though. It's like a farce. I mean, you're literally, there's a lot of doors slamming yep. and opening and stuff, which you know, I got that too, but that's a lot of costume changes and a lot of, I got to be out there in 30 seconds as somebody else. I assume this sort of thing is all very carefully orchestrated, that you probably have somebody helping you on with the coat back there and.
Sometimes. We do have a lovely ASM Jess who is back there to help with quick changes and prop handoffs, you know, when she can, but she also can't be in two places at once. Mm. So it's a lot of us, you know, the cast helping each other backstage when we can.
Yeah.
And a lot of panic. Shoot, that's
a lot of
calm
panic.
Down.
The whole backside of the set is lined with like hooks and cubby like things. So like, whole back of the set, it's like it would be a different play watching it. Like it would be its own play watching it from backstage.
Is there a moment where in rehearsal where you kind of go, yeah, this is it, or we're getting there, or we got it? I mean, you never go, oh, we're great, let's all go home and smoke a cigar, you know, we got it, this is tonight, it felt right. I mean, that must be a pretty magical moment for somebody in a cast. I can ask you both that because you're mm-hmm. both actors.
I'm curious to hear what you think.
Sure. So I think
no, not ever. It never happened.
Never. It still hasn't happened.
To date. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. The director's right here. No. I would say that magic moment probably haven't happened after opening. So we had our first, you know, two previews.
Yeah.
We got to get, you know, feedback from our director and feedback from the audience as well, in forms of laughter and also words to our director. And I think that Friday night when we officially opened, that was just the beginning. It's like now it's our show, and Jaren, our stage manager's show, mm-hmm. and we just are starting to settle into the chaos a little bit.
Yeah,
more.
But it's do you still find jokes that you didn't get before? Like one night you'll be out there and somebody will say something, you go, oh.
All the time, and especially with this show, because there's at least two or three sections that are the playwright has given options. But you can either choose one of those options or do something that you improvise yourself or make up yourself.
I read that. Did I read that? There's an improvise section here.
There are several.
I saw that on your website.
Yeah. There's one, I mean, one completely improvised thing that happens every night.
Ah.
And then there are like probably about four or five other spots in the show where we have a lot of different options. And in some of them, that means the other actors have to memorize all the other options. because, yeah, if one person throws out a line, the response needs to be the right response to that line. And with as fast as the show moves, that kind of turns into fun. But
oh, yeah, I can see
that. There's one whole outright moment of improv that happens on stage every night for a couple of minutes.
One of the things I was thinking about, it was great to see, you know, Colleen Cherry, Spencer Myers, you know, our some of our, and I don't mean old, our old friends, you know, who've been in the mm-hmm. company for a while. And there are a number of performers here who just kind of started showing up in the last couple of years on the job site stage. I'm thinking of Troy Brooks, who I think is marvelous, and Noah Friedman, who's also marvelous. And Logan. Logan actually came in and she designed something in Frankenstein, and she came here.
Yeah, she's been our effects artist for several years.
Yeah, so, and I want to give a shout-out to Cameron Kubley, because I don't know if this is his first show.
It is his first with us.
He's really talented. I've seen him.
He's very talented.
And he's a lawyer, too, so what are you going to do? And, of course, this one, who's been around for a year or two, a couple of job site shows. How did you come into their sphere, to job site, or they into yours?
Oh, no, I definitely tried to jump into their sphere. I actually went to Unified's Tampa Theater Bay, Unified's in summer of 2022, after like a couple weeks after I moved here.
The auditions.
Unified auditions. Mm-hmm. And I did a Shakespeare monologue because job site was doing Hamlet at the time. And they're like, if you want to be considered, you got to do Shakespeare. And I was like, I've done Shakespeare before. And so I did that monologue and I got a callback. And then through that callback process, I was cast as a very small role in Hamlet, and then that just led to other things, and so that's how I entered into their sphere.
Is that one of those things where you kind of go, boy, one day, you know, because it feels like, I mean, as somebody, I should get into the microphone here, as somebody who sees pretty much all these shows, you know, I do like, these people are in this is going to be good, you know, I don't think Noah's ever done anything. She's charming. Was she 22 or something? She did the podcast once. She's very, but it's like, you know they're going to be good. When I see you in there, I say, okay, you know. So that must be a kind of a badge of honor. Like, I'm in the company or,
absolutely, you know,
or in consideration for the company.
Yeah. And I mean, especially with job site, I mean, unfortunately, because I did move so close to the audition, so I hadn't seen any of job site's work. But then after the audition, I got to see Nicole, Janine Smith, star in Animals Out of Paper. That was the first job site show that I saw after the auditions. And it was just incredible. I was like, oh my gosh, I get to be involved with this company.
Yeah.
This produces such great work.
If I was an actor, I'd be like, well, I want to act with these people. But I'm not, so it's not going to happen.
Anymore.
Oh. Well, yeah, okay. It's been a while. We'll talk. We'll talk.
I've seen pictures on the internet.
Back when I had hair and I was thin. Yeah, in those days. That's the sort of thing I usually cut out of the podcast. But what the hell, we'll leave it in anyway. So Rosencrantz was after Hamlet. What am I thinking? Of course it was. That's when you and Nicole came in here and did the Arts Alive podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was all because of Hamlet, because I was Rosencrantz at Hamlet. So
yeah, that's so right. Yeah. That's right. So what's in your future? I mean, other than the obvious.
Well, right. Yeah. Yes. Can I mention that?
Oh, you can mention whatever you want.
Great, yeah. I'm 6.5 months pregnant.
Yay.
Yay. So, this baby will make me pull back a little bit on auditioning and stuff.
You'd think.
Yeah, and that's hopefully arriving in early October. So that's really the future that I'm thinking of now. I'm still auditioning, though, for things 2026 and beyond. But yeah,
like January 2026. She's like, I'm getting back in that saddle.
Right, you say that now, and then the little human has other words to say. But
well, but you'll be a true stage mother, and I got to put you down here.
That's right,
Mama's got to go out on stage now. I can see that happen. You know, one thing I looked at my notes, and I wanted to mention Caroline Huerta, who's very talented, and also this guy Ben Sutherland, who. I love the bit where he's doing like the evil one. It looks like he's got a Breathe Right strip on his nose to flatten his nose out.
Yeah, it's actually a piece of mic tape. Like,
oh yeah,
but we are. It's the white instead of the clear, because it looked more ridiculous to use the white tape.
He's very talented. I mean, he has a real Jim Carrey thing going on. He's from University of Tampa.
He's a UT guy. Yeah, I think he's a junior right now at UT, and he was just in. I think Bridges of Madison County, and I think he's done some stuff at Stageworks too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So, Trailer Park.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Well, let's recap here. Puffs. I'm not going to say the whole thing. It's called Puffs, folks, and it's on stage at Jobs Light Theater through August 3rd. That is the official theatrical company of the Stress Center for the Performing Arts. You want to go to jobsitetheater.org. As I always say, it's theater ER the way it's supposed to be. jobsitetheater.org to get your tickets, and it's doing phenomenally
it
well.
It's doing great, which we need. We really need things to do well right now. You know, ticket sales are really the only thing we can control, considering all the other stuff that's going on in the universe and coming at us. And you know, thankfully, like Rocky Horror last summer, this is a well-known thing. It's you don't have to explain it to people. It's a good time. People are coming down and having a party vibe, and that's really sensational for us because we really need it right now to help pay for all the other stuff we like to do.
I really did enjoy it. Although, as I said, I mean, I knew I was missing something because I'm just not educated in that world, but I could see, because it's so hugely popular, I could see where people who are familiar with it and, you know, immersed in it would fall apart how funny it is, you know, one reference after another, which is why I really want to see The Shark Is Not Working, because I'm a Jaws head. You know,
and yeah, and that one's full of just like the 70s movie stuff too, because they're telling stories about Spielberg and Lucas and this guy and a young John Voight, and it's like if you're into film and if that's your period,
ooh, John Voight, I'm so there,
right? Like, but that insider baseball, like, you know, going on and The Shark Is Broken, there are going to be plenty of people that are like, I don't know what that John Voight reference meant, you know, or I don't know why is that thing about why is that crack on Spielberg funny?
Yeah,
I, you know,
yeah. Yeah, and because it's the 50th anniversary, and I just watching all this stuff. Okay, the St. Dreyfus is telling the same old stories and stuff, but Ian Shaw was on this new thing that National Geographic did. It just came on, and he's taught, and they plugged his show, The Shark Is Broken, and I thought, and so it was just interesting new perspectives. He's talking about his father. I don't mean to plug that show out of anything else in the season, but I'm looking forward to that one.
Great. Well, and another reason, you know, again, you know, while we're trying to line up some stuff that's gonna fill the theater, because right now that's really all that matters.
Well, let's look at this show called May Day. It's a one man show about the Skyway Bridge. She got it.
I got it.
Catherine Yacko, David Jenkins, always a pleasure to speak to you both, and I wish you continued success. Legs be broken, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. And congratulations, Ms. Yacko, on the your impending blessed event.
Yes.
So, guys, see you soon.